Okay, I'm gonna pose three questions, and I'm gonna hopefully try to answer them with one mahalich, with one derech. I'll start with just something my wife had mentioned last week to me as we were sitting at the table, the Shabbos table. So usually when we discuss prophets, we discuss people who had a nevuah. So oftentimes the nevuah, you know, they built themselves to be great people, and when they had the nevuah, it made them even greater and even greater. As you could probably imagine, when a person speaks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on a regular basis, in whatever capacity it is, it only should feed his emunah level. It should feed his connection to Hashem. It should feed his clarity in the world. And we'd expect them to be rising from the time that they are getting their nevuah till they leave the world. If they are still receiving nevuah at the end, they're just rising and rising in levels of connection and kedusha to Hashem. And yet, for some reason, we find last week's parasha, Bilam was really the opposite. Bilam, he had kedusha, and according to Chazal, he had kedusha on par with that of Moshe Rabbeinu. This very, very intense level of kedusha that he had, and nevertheless, we do not find Bilam's behavior and his character to be improving at all. As a matter of fact, if anything, the opposite. He's more creative of ways to try to destroy Klal Yisrael, despite the fact that he's getting more opportunities to spend time with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and hear his words. And again, it wasn't sound like a regular Navi. He was, according to Chazal, he was getting Nevuah on the level just about of Moshe Rabbeinu. So what happened to Bilam? How come he wasn't improving as he was spending his lifetime conversing or hearing messages from the Ribono Shel Olam? That's question number one. More of a side, because it's the last parsha. I want to focus on this parsha, which is Parshas Pinchas. Parshas Pinchas had a lot of different topics that come up in it, but I want to focus on one very, in theory, very moving topic that comes up, and that's the handing the baton from Moshe Rabbeinu to Yeshua. The beginnings of that happens in this week's parsha. I'm going to read inside for you just a few psukim to get the mood going over here. Moshe Rabbeinu is about to, as he's getting closer to the end of his life, realizes he has to have a successor appointed. And Yeshua has been waiting in the wings for quite a time over here, always helping out in the base of Medrash, according to Chazal. He was being Masadar Safsal. He was arranging the benches for Moshe Rabbeinu's shir. He was certainly Moshe Rabbeinu's right-hand man. And Perichav Zayin, Pasuk Tezvav, Yidaber Moshe El Hashem Limur, Yifkod Hashem Elokei Aruchos L'chol Basar Ish Al Ha'eda. Moshe Rabbeinu makes a request that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should appoint somebody to take over. Someone should be taking over. Now, it goes on, Asher Yotei Lifnehem, V'Asher Yavol Lifnehem, V'Asher Yotzeim, V'Asher Yivyeim, Pasuk Yitzayim right now, Perichav Zayin, who goes in front of them, who brings them, he goes out, he brings them in. He's a leader. He's the leader of Klal Yisrael. The nation should not be Lo Tiyadas Hashem Katzon Asher Ein Lehem Ro'eh. It should not be like sheep without a leader, without someone to control and to oversee. And Moshe Rabbeinu knows he's getting older, and his lot is no longer taking Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. Who's going to be taking over? Yom Marshal Moshe Pasuk Yitches. This is what I focus on. Pasuk Yitches and Pasuk Yitches. Kach Lachas Yeshua Ben Nun Ish Asher Ruach Bo. V'samachta es yadcha alav. Put your hand upon him. Place your hand upon him. V'amadta oso pasuk yitches lifnei Elazar Kohen lifnei kol haida. V'tzivisa oso leinihem. You should place in front of you, in front of Elazar Kohen and in front of the congregation, and command and tell v'nasna mehodcha alav pasuk chav. Give from your glory to him. Manishmu kol adas bnei Yisrael. So that everyone will hear and know that Yeshua has been chosen as the next one in line. Because sometimes you look at Navi, you have this debate of who the next successor should be. You have a discussion, and that sometimes creates a civil war. So no civil war here. Yeshua is the next one. Tell everyone and let them know that Yeshua has been appointed to succeed you. I want to focus on two Rashis, in Pasuk Yudches and Pasuk Yates, one in each, and point a small contradiction. Hashem says, Moshe Rabbeinu, kach lecha, take. Now, when it comes to taking a person, oftentimes, Uncles will say this, I'll say the word, instead of the word take, I'll say devar. It says it over here as well. Devar means convince. Convince Yeshua to take over. It says Rashi, kachenu b'devarim, convince him with words. Ashrecha shezachis lanhig banav shalmakum. How lucky you are, how fortunate you are, that you merited to rule, to be the next leader of the banav shalmakum, of the children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's something exciting. They should be aware. They should be excited about that opportunity. That's number one, Rashi. Kach lecha, you know, encourage him with words. And then the next pasuk, as if we didn't see that last Rashi, the next pasuk says, "Btzivisa oso." You should command them all Yisrael regarding Yisrael and tell them the following thing. Duh! You should know Yeshua. Shetarchanim heim, sarvanim heim. They are difficult and they are challenging. They refuse all the time. It's going to be a ton of work. It's not easy. Amanash the Kabbalah, if knows when you take this job upon yourself, but that is who they are. Now, that sounds like a, you know, two opposite statements. On one hand, convince him to take it. How lucky you are, how fortunate you are, the banish shalmakum. And on the other hand, you know, tell them real. Tell them what's going on. They're tarchanim. They're difficult. They're sarvanim. They refuse to listen. They're very challenging people. So we have these two Rashis. Again, it's not like prakim separating them. Back to back, pasuk by pasuk. So I want to repeat, we have right now two questions so far we've mentioned. Question number one is Bilaam. Bilaam gets prophecy. I'll get back to that question that you're asking. Why does he convince? I'll get to that very soon. But when Bilaam gets prophecy, so the prophecy is something we expect someone to be getting closer to Hashem as prophecy, as he spends more time talking to Hashem. And Bilaam, we find not that, but the opposite. And number two, when it's time for Yeshua to take over for Moshe Rabbeinu as he's being groomed, take over from Moshe Rabbeinu, we have these two contradictory Rashis. One Rashi sounds like convince him, explain to him how lucky he is. And the next Rashi sounds like, oh my gosh, good luck to him. Let him know the deal of who he's getting as his flock, who he's going to be shepherding. And they're not easy to deal with. Sounds like contradiction. And the third thing I want to point out is based on Pasuk Chaf we just read. It says in Moshe Rabbeinu, it says, "V'nasata mehodcha alav." Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, give from your hod, from your glory to Yehoshua. Now, what does it mean from your glory? So the Gemara of Basra, the Ayin Heim and Aleph, and I'll read this to you inside right now, says the following. It says, O Mir, v'nasata mehodcha alav, towards the bottom of the Ayin Heim and Aleph and Baba Basra, it says, mehodcha v'lo koholcha. It says, give from your glory, but not all your glory. Moshe Rabbeinu and Yeshua were not the same level. So Moshe gave some of his glory to Yeshua, but not all of his glory. Zekeinu shevoso ador amru, the Zekeinu, the generation, described Pnei Moshe kipnei Chama, Pnei Yeshua kipnei Levana. Moshe Rabbeinu's face was shining like the sun, and Yeshua's face was only like the moon. The moon's a mere reflection of the sun. It gets its light from the sun, but it's a reflection of the sun. It doesn't compare to the light of the sun. And Moshe was like a glaring, blazing sun, and Yeshua was like the more, the less bright moon. The Gemara goes on and says, Oy la la osa busha, oy la la osa klima. What an embarrassment and what a shame it was. Now, what exactly is the embarrassment and what is the shame? And why is the Caden with the door saying that, not everybody else in the door? A lot of questions we have over here. So we posed now three questions. I'm going to answer this third one first. I'm going to use that, hopefully, answer to get back to the first two questions and answer those as well. What was the shame and embarrassment that Dafka the Zekeinim felt? So there's a number of pshatim that are brought down. One pshat brought down is that the shame and the embarrassment is that the representation of the Tzibur, whoever represents them, is because they are reflective of the level of the Tzibur. So if the Tzibur, before Yehoshua ben Nun, was led by Moshe Rabbeinu, that means that was an opportunity, a generation that was kadosh, kriyas yamsuf, they saw such beautiful things and unbelievable things. And Moshe Rabbeinu's glow was what they were worthy of getting, his bright sun. But the next generation must have been much weaker. And therefore, they only, quote-unquote, earned a leader that was a reflection of that sun, Yehoshua ben Nun. And that was the muster of the generation that was being taken over by Yehoshua ben Nun, especially the elders, because that's who represented who they were. And they were only, quote-unquote, deserving a Yehoshua ben Nun level, a moon-like level, and not a sun-like level of Moshe Rabbeinu. And that was a reflection of how they themselves must have been a drop-off of what their ancestors were as well. That's shot number one I saw quoted. But I want to focus on shot number two. And this really, I think, is going to pose, hopefully, the opening, the key, to explain all of the three questions that we had. Yitzhak Velazhin says, what was the busha in the Zekeinim? What was the embarrassment that they felt? So he gives a mushroom. He says there was a man one day who rode into town, and it was a very poor town. He rides in with wagons and chariots. And this town had never seen wealth like that before, ever in their lives. And everyone, obviously, as you can imagine, when someone rides in with the finest and fanciest of cars, and you're living in a place that's that barely even has a car, so everyone starts to kind of, you know, gather around. What's going on here? And who is this person? Who's he here to see? And he sure enough, he gets out of the car, out of the chariot, and everyone surrounds him. And he says, I've come here to make a proposal, a proposition to anyone interested. I asked you to join me on a year's worth of a mission I will be going from country to country doing business, and I can afford you luxury upon luxury. You'll have to say goodbye to your wife and your children for the year, but you will be coming back with wealth. Never imagine your wildest dreams. Who here is interested in joining me for this journey? Now, I never met this guy before. And was he serious? Was he doing a pyramid scheme? Who knew who he was in the first place? No one knew who he was. And therefore, everyone looked around and, you know, no one was jumping at the opportunity to join this man on his journey. But one guy, you know, like everyone else, poor, family could use help. Children were malnourished. The wife, he had never bought his wife a present for the last who knows how many years they were married. He looks at his wife, gives his wife a kiss, gives his children a big hug and a kiss, and he says, I'm going to do this for you. And he raises his hand, and he says, I want to join you on this journey. And sure enough, he gets into the wagon and he rides off. They don't see him for a year. A year later, to the day, comes back, wagons and chariots, 10 times the amount they had beforehand. This man gets out in royalist clothing with bags of presents to his family and even some of his friends and finest of foods. And he comes back in and he says goodbye and thank you to the man who had him come just a year ago and changed his life forever. And he goes back to his home and he lives there. And as time goes on, he wants to reconnect with his friends, this man. But he notices that his friends are giving the runaround. No one will spend time with him at all. No one will go out with him and drink with him and have meals together, because they all felt so ashamed. Every person who looked at him realized, that could have been me. If I would have raised my hand on that day with that person or instead of that person, I'd be the one carrying all this wealth. I'd be the one sharing my wife and my children with great gifts and luxuries. But instead, when they looked at him, all they saw was a reminder of their poverty and what could have been. Yehoshua ben Nun was not the biggest Talmud Chacham of that generation. He was not. As a matter of fact, in the list of the Meraglim, he was mentioned, I think, number five. He's mentioned number five. And according to the Ramban explains that the Meraglim were listed in order of their greatness, of how great they were. Yehoshua was not number one in that list. He was not known to have been the top person. He was just the top student of Moshe Rabbeinu. And they all now realized, had we worked harder, had we tried harder, we too could have been the leader, the next leader of Klal Yisrael. And that's what made them ashamed. Moshe Rabbeinu was blinding. No one could ever dream in a million years of echoing, you know, his greatness and following his footsteps. But Yehoshua ben Nun, absolutely, people could have attempted to follow and become like him. I remember Aaron Lichtenstein one time when he was telling us some of his, before he passed away, he was Rosh Kol, he was Rosh Yeshiva of the Gush of Har Etzion, and he was the Rosh Kol of Grus. And he would tell us, and I heard this a few times from him, who his leaders were in life. And he said, you know, he had three different leaders that he looked at who formed and fashioned who he was today. And I forget the third one, but the first one was Soloveitchik, who was his father-in-law, and who, he was also his Rebbe. And then he said Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. Now, he said Rav Aaron because he said that Rav Soloveitchik, I never in a million years could thought that I could ever be like him. But Rav Aaron I admired because I felt like I could be like him. And so he got to know him better and realized he couldn't be like him either, he said. Let's quote him. Even though Lipsy was a giant among giants as well. But the point is that when someone's out of your league, you don't even dream about going there. But when someone is in your league and you feel like you can get to that stage in life, there's a different feeling, a different level. And therefore, when everyone saw Yehoshua take over, they felt embarrassed and ashamed. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, the son, was blinding. There's no way anyone could ever dream of being Moshe Rabbeinu. But Yehoshua ben Nun was in the vicinity of them. They felt they could have gotten there. You know, if he made it, they could have made it. But they never did what he did. They never tried. They didn't raise their hand when the time came and the call came to be the next one to set the benches up for the shear. Only Yehoshua, day in, day out, was that person who demanded from himself to be Moshe Rabbeinu's right-hand man, to be his wingman, do anything he needed to do in order to help Moshe Rabbeinu succeed in his journey. And that was the busha, that was the embarrassment that came along with the elders, dafka of the generation, the elders who knew Yehoshua when he was younger, who knew how they were compared to Yehoshua, and yet who saw Yehoshua take the next lead, the mantle, while they were left as the Zekanim, not to take Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. I think that idea of realizing what could have been and being ashamed at what ended up being is the answer to the second question we asked as well. Why did Yehoshua have those two statements? Why is there one statement to convince him? And why did he convince him at all, as Seth asked? And the second question is why is in the very next pasuk we have is we're saying, they're not easy, they're tough. And the answer is Yoshua knows better than anybody what it means to put in hard work, what it means if you know how far you can get. These are not stam people. They're Baruch Shem Makom. They're people who are the children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are Klal Yisrael. And that's an unbelievable opportunity that you have to be part of that opportunity, that chance to raise them like Moshe, to be the shepherd for them, to become the next great people, you know, in the world. But just so you know, they're raw. They're raw material. It's not easy. They're tarchanim, they're sarvanim, they're going to turn you down at times, they're going to be tough with you. But the reward that awaits you for succeeding in training and harnessing their power is something you cannot imagine. They're Baruch Shem Makom. And therefore, on one hand, to answer Seth's question, he needed to be convinced because he saw, as he was Moshe Rabbeinu's right-hand man, that Moshe Rabbeinu had put up with a lot, put up with the Korachs of the world, put up with people who were Dasan Vaviram, who rejected him at every step of the way. It's not an easy job to take upon yourself. But the reward is endless. To be able to be the next leader, the next link in the chain, is not something that's important to have. Yeshua, more than anybody, knew that these two statements were not contradictions at all. They were both positive, exciting statements. They're raw, but the potential is endless. They're Baruch Shem Makom. You can tap into that as well. And that's why he was able to accept those two statements and choose to be the next leader. And finally, back to Bilam. What happened to Bilam? How come the prophecy he received day in, day out, or I don't know, day in, day out, but on par with or close to that of Moshe Rabbeinu, how come that didn't make him into a big tzaddik? And the answer is a very important idea, which I think is important for us to realize ourselves. Bilam was gifted this in his DNA. It wasn't something he worked for. He didn't put an effort to become the person he was. He wasn't working on himself as Chesmon and Nefesh. Moshe Rabbeinu became the leader of Klal Yisrael because he became a great person. You know, the story goes that he was running after the sheep that ran away from the flock when he first saw the first revelation from Hashem, and the sheep was so tired it was licking from the water that it found. He picked up the sheep and started bringing it back, and Hashem says, "That's the one I'm gonna send my message through. That's the next leader of Klal Yisrael. He's not a great speaker, but he's a great mensch. He's a great leader. He's a shepherd. I need a shepherd to shepherd my people as well." So Moshe Rabbeinu was a worked on kli. He made himself into a receptacle that could be mekabel HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the message for Klal Yisrael. But Bilam was gifted something from birth. He was gifted talent. He was gifted prophecy. And he was gifted that way because otherwise the nation of the world would say, "How come you can't blame me for not cutting close to you?" But Israel had a ruler, had a Navi, had a manhig, and we didn't have that. So Bilam becomes that manhig. But it wasn't earned. It wasn't worked on as a ben adam trying to become better in life. It was something that was gifted to him. And since he didn't have that, he never became a kli to change. He became a kli to give over information. But he wasn't a kli to receive things on his own. He didn't work on himself. In life, we are given many gifts. We're given many natural talents that we all have. But how many of us are becoming a receptacle to maintain and to get the showers of what God gives us? If you go outside with a flat wooden board and you put it outside in a heavy rainstorm, and then when it finishes raining, you take it back in again, so it's wet. But it hasn't collected any water. It hasn't. It's a flat board. It's not a receptacle quite yet. But imagine that you took a wooden board and you carved in the inside a big hole in the middle. And then you did the same thing. You put it outside. And then you would bring it back in. Now it's full of water. But you know what you did to make it full of water? You lowered the board. You made something deeper in. You made it deep and you made it lower. For a person to become receptacle, he has to lower himself. Yeshua ben Nun became a receptacle because he lowered himself. Because he was willing to dust off the benches. And when the show was over, he set them up again. He was willing to be the guy who picked up the trash in the basement when he saw it on the floor. He was willing to lower himself because he knew that lowering himself would make him a better receptacle. As opposed to a Bilam who was born into it. He was selected, not because he deserved it, because someone had to be, so he was. You can't be changed if you don't work on yourself at the same time. You can see message after message, but nothing will matter. Nothing will change because you didn't do anything about changing that message for yourself either. And that's the lesson of this week's Parsha. Is that all the people around Yoshua ben Nun who knew him at a younger age, the Zakenim, they were embarrassed because they saw how Yoshua lowered himself. But by lowering yourself, he made himself the next capable leader for Klal Yisrael. And that's why the message to Yoshua was, they're raw, but you know better than anybody else that it's well worth it to put in the time and the effort because these are Baruch Shem Makom. These are people that you are going to be proud of one day. And as we go through our journey in our lives, we have times when we're feeling good and times when we're feeling less good. Just understand the potential that is in each and every one of us to quote unquote lower ourselves, work on ourselves. Because we're all hearing messages, things going around us in our lives. How much do we pick up on? How much do we soak in? How much are we building ourselves after seeing these messages? You have two people who watch the same movie, see the same thing, experience the same moment in time. But how many of them have the same takeaway lesson from it? Usually not the same amount. How much you work on yourself, how much you read a scene and are developed and you change by it. And that's an area where we have to make sure we work on ourselves to make sure that we are lowering ourselves at the right time to make sure that when the time comes for someone to step up, you should be the man, the person who's able to guide your family, your friends, your community to the next stage of life. Because knowing that we are all, no matter how much tachanim we have and savranim we have, people who are turning people down and difficult, but they are banim shel makom, as are you. And if we realize that, we can tolerate the challenges that come along with that, and to be great leaders among Klal Yisrael. Have a great Shabbos.